Hey, welcome back to Madison Public Library's Theater of the Mind. Tonight, I bring you part 5 of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. If you're looking to hear more stories, go ahead and like this video and subscribe to our channel. Last time, the first spirit brought Mr. Scrooge back to a very lonely Christmas. Let's continue the journey as the spirit brings Mr. Scrooge to another Christmas in Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. Scrooge's former self grew larger at the words, and the room became a little darker and more dirty. The panels shrunk, the windows cracked, fragments of plaster fell out of the ceiling, and the naked laths were shown instead. But how all this was brought about, Scrooge knew no more than you do. He only knew that it was quite correct, that everything happened so, that there he was, alone again, when all the other boys had gone home for the jolly holidays. He was not reading now, but walking up and down despairingly. Scrooge looked at the ghost, and, with a mournful shaking of his head, glanced anxiously towards the door. It opened, and a little girl, much younger than the boy, came darting in, and putting her arms around his neck, and often kissing him, addressed him as her dear, dear brother.
"I've come to bring you home, dear brother,"
said the child, clapping her tiny hands and bending down to laugh.
"To bring you home, home, home."
"Home, little fan?"
returned the boy.
"Yes,"
said the child, brimful of glee.
"Home for good and all. Home forever and ever. Father is so much kinder than he used to be. That home's like heaven. He spoke so gently to me one dear night when I was going to bed that I was not afraid to ask him once more if you might come home. And he said, 'Yes, you should.' And he sent me in a coach to bring you, and you're to be a man,"
said the child, opening her eyes,
"and are never to come back here. But first, we're to be together all the Christmas long and have the merriest time in all the world."
"You're quite a woman, little fan,"
exclaimed the boy. She clapped her hands and laughed and tried to touch his head, but, being too little, laughed again and stood tiptoe to embrace him. Then she began to drag him, in her childish eagerness, towards the door, and he, nothing loath to go, accompanied her. A terrible voice in the hall cried,
"Bring down Master Scrooge's box, there."
And in the hall appeared the schoolmaster himself, who glared on Master Scrooge with a ferocious condescension, and threw him into a dreadful state of mind by shaking hands with him. He then conveyed him and his sister into the veriest old well of a shivering best parlor that ever was seen, where the maps upon the wall and the celestial and terrestrial globes in the windows were waxy with cold. Here he produced a decanter of curiously light wine and a block of curiously heavy cake, and administered installments of those dainties to the young people, at the same time sending out a meager servant to offer a glass of something to the postboy, who answered that he thanked the gentleman, but if it was the same tap as he had tasted before, he had rather not. Master Scrooge's trunk being by this time tied to the top of the chaise, the children bade the schoolmaster goodbye right willingly, and, getting into it, drove gaily down the garden sweep, the quick wheels dashing the hoarfrost and snow from off the dark leaves of the evergreens like spray.
"Always a delicate creature, whom a breath might have withered,"
said the ghost.
"But she had a large heart."
"So she had,"
cried Scrooge.
"You're right. I will not gainsay it, spirit. God forbid."
"She died a woman,"
said the ghost,
"and had, as I think, children."
"One child,"
Scrooge returned.
"How true,"
said the ghost.
"Your nephew."
Scrooge seemed uneasy in his mind, and answered briefly,
"Yes."
Although they had but that moment left the school behind them, they were now in the busy thoroughfares of a city, where shadowy passengers passed and repassed, where shadowy carts and coaches battled for the way, and all the strife and tumult of a real city were. It was made plain enough, by the dressing of the shops, that here too it was Christmas time again. But it was evening and the streets were lighted up. The ghost stopped at a certain warehouse door and asked Scrooge if he knew it.
"Know it,"
said Scrooge.
"Was I apprenticed here?"
They went in. At the sight of an old gentleman in a Welsh wig sitting behind such a high desk that if he had been 2 inches taller, he might have knocked his head against the ceiling, Scrooge cried in great excitement.
Why, it's old Fezziwig! Bless his heart, it's Fezziwig alive again!
Old Fezziwig laid down his pen and looked up at the clock, which pointed to the hour of 7. He rubbed his hands, adjusted his capacious waistcoat, laughed all over himself, from his shoes to his organ of benevolence, and called out in a comfortably oily, rich, fat, jovial voice,
Yo-ho there, Ebenezer! Dick!
Scrooge's former self, now grown a young man, came briskly in, accompanied by his fellow apprentice.
Dick Wilkins, to be sure,
said Scrooge to the ghost.
Bless me, yes. There he is. He was very much attached to me, was Dick. Poor Dick. Dear, dear.
Yo-ho, my boys,
said Fezziwig.
No more work tonight. Christmas Eve, Dick. Christmas Ebenezer. Let's have the shutters up,
cried old Fezziwig with a sharp clap of his hands.
Before a man can say Jack Robinson.
You wouldn't believe how those two fellows went at it. They charged into the street with the shutters. 1, 2, 3. Had them up in their places. 4, 5, 6. Barred them and pinned them. 7, 8, 9. And came back before you could have got to 12, panting like racehorses.
Hilly-ho!
Cried old Fezziwig, skipping down from the high desk with wonderful agility.
Clear away, my lads, and let's have lots of room here. Hilly-ho, Dick! Cheer up, Ebenezer!
Clear away? There was nothing they wouldn't have cleared away, or couldn't have cleared away, with old Fezziwig looking on. It was done in a minute. Every movable was packed off, as if it were dismissed from public life forevermore. The floor was swept and watered, the lamps were trimmed, fuel was heaped upon the fire, and the warehouse was as snug and warm and dry and bright a ballroom as you would desire to see upon a winter's night. In came a fiddler with a music book and went up to the lofty desk and made an orchestra of it and tuned like 50 stomach aches. In came Mrs. Fezziwig, one vast substantial smile. In came the 3 Miss Fezziwigs, beaming and lovable. In came 6 young followers whose hearts they broke. In came all the young men and women employed in the business. In came the housemaid with her cousin, the baker. In came the cook with her brother's particular friend, the milkman. In came the boy from over the way, who was suspected of not having board enough from his master, trying to hide himself behind the girl from next door but one, who was proved to have her ears pulled by her mistress. In they all came, one after another, some shyly, some boldly, some gracefully, some awkwardly, some pushing, some pulling. In they all came, anyhow and everyhow. Away they all went, 20 couple at once, hands half round and back again the other way, down the middle and up again, round and round in various stages of affectionate grouping. Old top couple always turning up in the wrong place, new top couple starting off again as soon as they got there. All top couples at last, and not a bottom one to help them. When this result was brought about, old Fezziwig, clapping his hands to stop the dance, cried out,
Well done!
And the fiddler plunged his hot face into a pot of porter, especially provided for that purpose. But, scorning rest upon his reappearance, he instantly began again, though there was no dancers yet, as if the other fiddler had been carried home, exhausted, on a shutter, and he were a brand new man resolved to beat him out of sight or perish. There were more dances, and there were forfeits, and more dances, and there was cake, and there was negus, and there was a great piece of cold roast, and there was a great piece of cold boiled, and there were mince pies and plenty of beer. But the great effect of the evening came after the roast and boiled, when the fiddler, an artful dog mind, the sort of man who knew his business better than you or I could have told him, struck up Sir Roger de Corvallet. Then old Fezziwig stood out to dance with Mrs. Fezziwig, top couple too, with a good stiff piece of work cut out for them, 3 or 4 or 20 pair of partners, people who were not to be trifled with, people who would dance and had no notion of walking. But if they had been twice as many, 4 times, old Fezziwig would have been a match for them, and so would Mrs. Fezziwig. As to her, she would worthy to be his partner in every sense of the term. If that's not high praise, tell me higher, and I'll use it. A positive light appeared to issue from Fezziwig's calves. They shone in every part of the dance like moons. You couldn't have predicted, at any given time, what would become of them next. And when old Fezziwig and Mrs. Fezziwig had gone through the dance, advance and retire, both hands to your partner, bow and curtsy, corkscrew, thread the needle, and back again to your place, Fezziwig cut. Cut so deftly that he appeared to wink with his legs, and came upon his feet again without a stagger. When the clock struck 11, this domestic ball broke up. Mr. and Mrs. Fezziwig took their stations, one on either side of the door, and shaking hands with every person individually as he or she went out, wished him or her a Merry Christmas. When everybody had retired but the two princesses, they did the same to them, and thus the cheerful voices died away, and the lads were left to their beds, which were under a counter in the back shop. During the whole of this time, Scrooge had acted like a man out of his wits. His heart and soul were in the scene and with his former self. He corroborated everything, remembered everything, enjoyed everything, and underwent the strangest agitation. It was not until now, with the bright faces of his former self and Dick were turned from them, that he remembered the ghost, and became conscious that it was looking full upon him, with the light upon its head burnt very clear.
A small matter,
said the ghost,
to make these silly folks so full of gratitude.
Small,
echoed Scrooge. The spirit signed to him to listen to the two apprentices, who were pouring out their hearts in praise of Fezziwig, and when he had done so, said,
Why, is it not? He had spent but a few pounds of your mortal money, 3 or 4 perhaps. Is that so much that he deserves this praise?
It isn't that,
said Scrooge, heated by the remark, and speaking unconsciously like his former, not his latter self.
It isn't that, spirit. He has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. Say that his power lies in words and looks, in things so slight and insignificant that it is impossible to add and count them up. What then? The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune.
He felt the spirit's glance and stopped.
What's the matter?
Asked the ghost.
Nothing particular,
said Scrooge.
Something, I think,
the ghost insisted.
No,
said Scrooge.
No, I should like to be able to say a word or two to my clerk just now. That's all.
His former self turned down the lamps as he gave utterance to the wish, and Scrooge and the ghost again stood side by side in the open air.
My time grows short,
observed the spirit.
Quick!
This was not addressed to Scrooge, or to anyone whom he could see, but it produced an immediate effect, for again Scrooge saw himself. He was older now, a man in the prime of his life. His face was not the harsh and rigid lines of later years, but it had begun to wear the signs of care and avarice. There was an eager, greedy, restless motion in the eye, which showed the passion that had taken root, and where the shadow of the growing tree would fall. He was not alone, but sat by the side of a fair young girl in a mourning dress, in whose eyes there were tears which sparkled in the light that shone out of the ghosts of Christmas past.
It matters very little,
she said softly.
To you, very little. Another idol has displaced me, and if it can cheer and comfort you in time to come as I would have tried to do, I have no just cause to grieve.
What idol has displaced you?
He rejoined.
A golden one.
This is the even-handed dealing of the world,
he said.
There is nothing on which it is so hard as poverty, and there is nothing it professes to condemn with such severity as the pursuit of wealth.
You fear the world too much,
she answered gently.
All your other hopes have merged into the hope of being beyond the chance of its sordid reproach. I've seen your noble aspirations fall off one by one, until the master passion, gain, engrosses you. Have I not?
What then?
He retorted.
Even if I have grown so much wiser, what then? I am not changed towards you.
She shook her head.
Am I?
Our contract is an old one. It was made when we were both poor, and content to be so until, in good season, we can improve our worldly fortune by our patient industry, you are changed. When it was made, you were another man.
I was a boy,
he said impatiently. Your own feeling tells you that you are not what you are, she returned. I am. That which promised happiness when we were one in heart is fraught with misery now that we are two. How often and how keenly I have thought of this, I will not say. It is enough that I have thought of it and can release you.
Have I ever sought release?
In words? No, never.
In what then?
In changed nature, in an altered spirit, in another atmosphere of life, another hope as its great end, in everything that made my love of any worth or value in your sight. If this had never been between us, said the girl, looking mildly, but with steadiness upon him, tell me, would you seek me out and try to win me now? No. He seemed to yield to the justice of this supposition in spite of himself. But he said, with a struggle,
you think not.
I would gladly think otherwise if I could, she answered. Heaven knows what I have learned, a truth like this. I know how strong and irresistible it must be. But if you were free today, tomorrow, yesterday, can even I believe that you would choose a dowerless girl? You who, in your very confidence with her, weigh everything by gain. Or choosing her, if for a moment you were false enough to your one guiding principle to do so, do I not know that your repentance and regret would surely follow? I do. And I release you with a full heart. For the love of him you once were. He was about to speak, but with her head turned from him, she resumed. You may. The memory of what is past half makes me hope you will have pain in this. A very, very brief time, and you would dismiss the recollection of it gladly as an unprofitable dream from which it happened well that you awoke. May you be happy in life that you have chosen. She left him, and they parted.
Spirit,
said Scrooge,
show me no more. Conduct me home. Why do you delight to torture me?
One shadow more,
exclaimed the ghost.
No more,
cried Scrooge.
No more. I don't wish to see it. Show me no more.
But the relentless ghost pinioned him in both his arms and forced him to observe what happened next. They were in another scene and place, a room, not very large or handsome, but full of comfort. Near to the winter fire sat a beautiful young girl, so like that last that Scrooge believed it was the same, until he saw her, now a comely matron, sitting opposite her daughter. The noise in this room was perfectly tumultuous, for there were more children there than Scrooge in his agitated state of mind could count. And, unlike the celebrated herd in the poem, there were not 40 children conducting themselves like one, but every child was conducting itself like 40. The consequences were uproarious beyond belief, but no one seemed to care. On the contrary, the mother and daughter laughed heartily and enjoyed it very much, and the latter, soon beginning to mingle in the sports, got pillaged by the young brigades most ruthlessly. What would I not have given to be one of them? Though I never could have been so rude, no, no. I wouldn't for the wealth of all the world have crushed that braided hair and torn it down. And for the precious little shoe, I would not have plucked it off. God bless my soul, to save my life. As to measuring her waist in sport as they did, bold young brood, I couldn't have done it. I should have expected my arm to have grown round it for punishment, and never come straight again. And yet, I should have dearly liked, I own, to have touched her lips, to have questioned her, that she might have opened them, to have looked upon the lashes of her downcast eyes, and never raised a blush, to have let loose waves of hair, an inch of which would be a keepsake beyond price. In short, I would have liked, I do confess, to have the lightest license of a child, and yet to have been man enough to know its value. But now a knocking at the door was heard, and such a rush immediately ensued that she, with laughing face and plundered dress, was borne towards it, the center of a flushed and boisterous group, just in time to greet the father, who came home attended by a man laden with Christmas toys and presents. Then the shouting and the struggling and the onslaught that was made on the defenseless porter, the scaling him with chairs for ladders to dive into his pockets, despoil him of brown paper parcels, hold on tight by his cravat, hug him round his neck, pummel his back, and kick his legs in irrepressible affection. The shouts of wonder and delight with which the development of every package was received. The terrible announcement that the baby had been taken in the act of putting a doll's frying pan into his mouth and was more than suspected of having swallowed a fictitious turkey glued on a wooden platter. The immense relief of finding this false alarm. The joy and gratitude and ecstasy. They were all indescribable alike. It is enough that, by degrees, the children and their emotions got out of the parlor, and, by one stair at a time, up to the top of the house, where they went to bed, and so subsided. And now Scrooge looked on more attentively than ever, when the master of the house, having his daughter leaning fondly on him, sat down with her and her mother at his own fireside. And when he thought that such another creature, quite as graceful and as full of promise, might have called him father, and been a springtime in the haggard winter of his life, his sight grew very dim indeed.
"Belle,"
said the husband, turning to his wife with a smile,
"I saw an old friend of yours this afternoon."
"Who was it?"
"Gus."
"How can I, Tut? Don't I know?"
she added in the same breath, laughing as he laughed.
"Mr. Scrooge?"
"Mr. Scrooge it was. I passed his office window, and as it was not shut up, and he had a candle inside, I could scarcely help seeing him. His partner lies upon the point of death, I hear. And there he sat alone, quite alone in the world, I do believe."
"Spirit,"
said Scrooge in a broken voice,
"remove me from this place."
"I told you these were the shadows of things that have been,"
said the ghost.
"That they are what they are. Do not blame me."
"Remove me,"
Scrooge exclaimed.
"I can't bear it."
He turned upon the ghost, and seeing that it looked upon him with a face, in which, in some strange way, there were fragments of all the faces it had shown him, wrestled with it.
"Leave me. Take me back. Haunt me no longer."
In the struggle, if that can be called a struggle, in which the ghost, with no visible resistance on its own part, was undisturbed by any effort of its adversary, Scrooge observed that its light was burning high and bright, and dimly connecting that with its influence over him, he seized the extinguisher cap and by a sudden action pressed it down upon its head. The spirit dropped beneath it, so that the extinguisher covered its whole form. But though Scrooge pressed it down with all his force, he could not hide the light, which streamed from under it in an unbroken flood upon the ground. He was conscious of being exhausted and overcome by an irresistible drowsiness, and further of being in his own bedroom. He gave the cap a parting squeeze, in which his hand relaxed, and had barely the time to reel to bed before he sank into a heavy sleep.
What a trip.
Stay tuned to the story by liking this video and subscribing to our channel. Maybe even leave a comment. Keep an eye out for us on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, and Twitter. We always have cool stuff going on, like these stories and book sales. Toodaloo, everybody. Toodaloo.